Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's a show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we try to help you deal with all this. And I'm hoping I can make it through the show today without having an episode of screaming and ranting and raving. Because that has happened to me. It happened to me a couple of times over this past week. Once with a colleague. I completely lost control of my faculties and just began screaming and yelling. And then it happened another time, less embarrassingly. I was in my car alone listening to someone on the radio. And they were both talking about something related to social distancing and opening up carefully and slowly and obeying the orders and the second wave, and that's, I think it was the second wave where I snapped, in both cases, as a matter of fact. And I'll get to why, but I'm going to start elsewhere. Number one, I've been struggling with the problem of laziness. And how long? Well, since about the age of 13, I've been struggling with the problem of laziness, and I will tell you that this situation of me not being able to work because everything is closed. Everything in my industry is closed. Just barely starting to reopen in a few places where people have stopped wetting themselves, but only slightly. They're still dripping down their leg, but they've stopped the massive flow. So I've got no work. My phone doesn't ring. I have nowhere to go. And so I'm struggling with laziness. And so what I've done in order to overcome the desire to become more and more lazy is I have assigned to myself increasingly difficult tasks, increasingly more and more difficult tasks. And I don't know what I've told you about on the air because my life and the show all kind of blend together. This is pretty much who I am. So this isn't my alter ego this is where I vent how I really feel about everything. So those of you who know me in other venues or other, that's my alter ego. This is actually me. Okay, just to be clear. So we built a 24-case staircase to Goat Pen, which I don't know if I've talked about that on the air. Probably have, huh? Since it absorbed a week of our lives, using railroad ties and bricks. And then, as if that were not enough, it was enormously difficult. More so for my extremely attractive audio engineer than it was for me. By the way, we've just been in the evenings, after dinner and the kids have gone to bed, we've just been trying to wrap our heads around the fact that this has gone on this long. That this alleged lockdown by our alleged political leaders has actually gone on this long. Because we are shocked. My extremely attractive audio engineer initially was certain that they could never pull this off for more than a couple of weeks. I was a little more pessimistic, but anyway, we've been wrong about that. And so I decided, as if the staircase to Goat Pen, and she's buying a stairway to Goat Pen. Oh, I just had to slip that in there. I don't know why. I decided to build a hutch for my daughter's rabbits. Now, I've been diagnosed as severely allergic to rabbits, and so that has explained all my respiratory issues over the last few years. Did get me to quit smoking, though, so there was something good that came out of that. Something good can come out of everything, even if it's bad. So I had to build the rabbits a hutch outside, so I did that, and that was difficult. But I got it done. I built them a house and a hutch. Hutch is about 6 feet tall, 8 feet long, 4 feet wide. They got some room to run around in there. And neglected to account for the fact that rabbits tend to dig holes. And I'm surprised I hadn't thought about that, but I never really thought about that. But then I thought, wait a minute, I used to watch Bugs Bunny and he lived in a hole in the ground. It used to be common knowledge that rabbits dig holes, but I had forgotten about it. I neglected that in the designs phase of the hutch design. And so within a few days, the rabbits escaped and they were out in the yard where they could have been eaten by coyotes. And so we decided what we're going to do is we're going to reinforce the ground with something called hardware cloth, which has nothing to do with cloth. It's a little wire. It's brutal, vicious stuff is what it is. It's akin to chicken wire, but it's a little tighter. And anyway, look it up, hardware cloth. It's fun to work with. So we decided we'd line the floor with hardware cloth so that the rabbits could not dig out. But then my extremely attractive audio engineer, along with my daughters, they got those puppy dog eyes, and they said, but then the rabbits won't be able to dig, and they seem to really have a lot of fun digging. And so what I was convinced to do, well, actually, I came up with it myself. It's my own fault. I decided to create a basket made out of wood and hardware cloth, about a foot deep, and then I would dig out the area under the hutch, place the basket in the earth, and then refill the basket with the earth, and then put everything back in place. So now the rabbits have their own private playground where they can dig and still do rabbit things and whatever it takes to keep a rabbit happy and mentally agile. And they can't dig their way out. Yeah. And so anyway, it turns out that the earth under where I had to dig there was a very impressive network of root systems from various trees and plants all over the yard. So it turned into quite the ordeal, as a matter of fact. But I have the basket has been buried in the bathtub, and I'm just working on some leveling and some of the finer finish work. And so and as I'm doing these increasingly difficult projects, more and more difficult, I've been thinking about my friends who live in the city and who have apartments, and I just how it must be to have to actually stay in an apartment for the majority of the day every single day, and then with no real work to do. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me that this has gone on this long. It's incomprehensible to me. And so there. My next project. I haven't decided what the next project's going to be. I've got another week, basically. Another week before I attempt to go back to work in one of the states that has started to reopen. And so I've got another week. I've got to come up with another project. I'm confident that between the daughters and the goats and the chickens and the rabbits and now the pugs. Yep, pugs, oh, dogs.
Door.
Yep. Two dogs.
The door.
The door.
Put the door.
We got to put a door? Oh, yeah, the door. That's right. Well, there you go. I've got my next project is something I'm horrible at, doors. I've had some of my worst DIY experiences in and around doors. And that's why in normal times we would hire a professional to do doors because doors are difficult. But these are not normal times. Because I can't.
That's a doggy door I'm talking about.
Oh, the doggy door. Yeah. Well, maybe that'll be easier. Sure. Yes. That'll be easier. Oh, I thought you were talking about the door that the dogs ate already.
Oh, yeah.
You got to fix that. So we got these pugs, and I forgot that dogs are highly destructive creatures, especially early in their careers. And so they've already ripped up an extremely expensive really nice screen door. And that's just the beginning. Okay, so we've had to take everything up off the floor. The dogs are too young to train, so you have to kind of puppy-proof yourself and your immediate surroundings for a while until you can start training the dogs. And so that should be fun. But at least I'm not trapped in a 600-square-foot apartment in Manhattan on the verge of insanity. That's where I would be. I would be on the verge of insanity. In fact, I have a good friend who's in that exact position, and she is seriously considering selling out and just getting out of the city. At first, I thought she was joking about it, but I sense the desperation in her voice. And so anyway, I told her she's welcome to come out here and find an acre so that the next time they do this to us, and I'm going to get to that. Is there going to be a next time? No. Well, first, will this ever end? And second, will there be a next time? But first, I need to open the show with an apology to General Michael Flynn. Back in somewhere around 2018, I think, whenever Flynn resigned, I don't remember dates, and I can't give you the exact date. I found it hard to believe that a decorated general, who served two different administrations, by the way, came out of Obama, served in the Trump administration, I found it hard to believe that he would resign in the face of what I could see to be a pretty flimsy, cooked up, baked up, something that any lawyer worth his salt should have been able to defend. But Flynn resigned. And there were other rumors around, and I assume that the only way a guy of this stature would resign, there's something they've got on him. And just to be specific, something they've got on him that would make his wife very angry. That's what I assumed. And I believe I asserted that possibility or that suspicion on the air. And for that, Mr. Flynn, I am sorry. I apologize. I was wrong. I did not know that they were threatening to harass Mr. Flynn's family in similar fashion to what they were doing to him. They were about to drag his son through something similar, and I did not know that. And so now I understand. I may have resigned to protect a family member from these maniacs. I mean, listen to this. This is from the Washington Examiner. On January 3rd, 2017, you'll remember Chuck Schumer was on the Rachel Maddow Show. Well, no, you won't remember that because you don't watch the Rachel Maddow Show. I would never remember that. Except because of what he said, it made it onto all the other shows that we do watch and we do listen to. And you remember that Rachel Maddow said that President-elect Trump is claiming that he's being spied on, that his wires have been tapped. What do you say to that, Chuck? And you remember, Chucky Schumer said, don't mess with the intel community. They have six ways from Sunday to get back at you. That was January 3rd, 2017. The very next day, January 4th, we now know through the release of documents, finally, we now know that the next day, January 4th, was the day Peter Strzok overruled the FBI agents who had prepared a report saying Michael Flynn had done nothing wrong. They could find no criminal. They could find nothing. They knew he might have had some lapses of memory. Maybe he had gotten some dates wrong. He had gotten some, but they found nothing criminal, nothing. They were ready to close the case. And the next day, after Chucky's little snide little remark on Rachel Maddow's show, Peter Strzok actually pulled the trigger on the setup job against Michael Flynn. Strzok blocked the FBI from closing its investigation, and the folks who released the documents, which none of us have had a chance to read it all, it's all redacted and all this. Anyway, it appears that there was involvement from FBI Director James Comey, Deputy Director Andrew McKay, because Strzok in some of these documents talked about getting the seventh floor involved. And if the seventh floor is involved, well, then the Oval Office is involved. And though this goes all the way up to Obama. Anyway, so there's just this confluence of events that there is a significant amount of panic going on at the highest echelons of the Democrat Party And it doesn't have anything to do with possibly getting sick or possibly dying or trying to reopen slowly and carefully or trying to make sure everybody is concerned about life and our fellow citizens and follows the rules and social distances and stays at home. It's got nothing to do with anything at all to do with anything to do with any of that. It has a lot to do with this. That's right, McCabe. That's right, Comey. Strzok, Page, all of you. You're gonna get what you deserve. In this life or the next. And by the way, I predict none of them get what they deserve in this life. In fact, nobody involved in that, which probably the biggest political scandal in American history, if all were revealed. Not a single person is prosecuted. I shouldn't say that. No, I'm going to say that. I don't even think there will be a prosecution of not a single one of them, because they're all in bed together. All right. Meanwhile, from the war file, this is just an 86-year-old couple was shot last Friday at about 10 o'clock in the morning at the Delaware Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Chesapeake City. I'm sorry, in Bear, Delaware, on Chesapeake City Road. A 29-year-old man who I will not say his name. A 29-year-old man was the killer. He fled into the woods. He exchanged gunfire with the police. There was a standoff with the police that lasted for almost 6 hours with this killer. Now, the 86-year-old couple has not been identified. But the woman was pronounced dead at the scene at the Delaware Veterans Memorial Cemetery. Her husband was taken to a nearby hospital where he later died. Officers found the killer dead from a single gunshot wound. They don't know if it was suicide or... But just inexplicable act of gross, horrible violence. Inexplicable, incomprehensible. What does a 29-year-old man have against an 86-year-old couple in a cemetery? That he shoots them. It's incomprehensible. And that's the only reason I'm doing the story. I don't know what happened. I don't know the circumstances. Nobody knows anything. Nobody can follow up on any stories because we're all still wetting our pants about maybe getting sick and quite possibly dying. Meanwhile, from the Domestic Tranquility File, Bing Liu, a 37-year-old assistant professor at the University of Pittsburgh, was found dead in his house last Saturday. Colleagues claim that he was close to making, quote, significant findings, unquote, on his studies of COVID-19, sparking online speculation that Liu's death was an assassination. I remember reading some of this. He was about to uncover that the Chinese had created the virus. He was about to reveal that the virus was, in fact, created by the U.S. military. If you go down and you read the comments underneath a lot of these stories, it's no wonder that we've just had the most significant spastic panic attack in world history, in which a bunch of idiots handed over our country to the mentally deranged and criminally insane. Because all you see in the comments are deranged people with all their deranged crackpot ideas. The gunman, in fact, was identified as a 46-year-old software engineer, Hao Gu, who killed himself after returning to his car after shooting and killing Bing Liu. He shot him multiple times in the head, neck, torso, and extremities. So Mr. Gu was very angry at Mr. Liu, and then he kills himself. The BBC, this is a BBC report, says Lou and Goo knew each other. And the investigation has determined that it was a murder-suicide resulting from coronavirus research? Huh? No. It was a murder-suicide resulting from a lengthy dispute regarding an intimate partner. Which is almost always the case when there's a murder-suicide. It's almost always the case that it involves intimacy. We'll just leave it at that, okay? And it involves someone stepping outside the biblical boundaries of intimacy. That leads to people getting shot and killed very often. We go from there. Speaking of conspiracy theories, we go to the actual conspiracy. That's right, the conspiracy that operates every day in broad daylight. And nobody has to have a secret handshake or a smoke signal, so they don't have to have a secret symbol or a lodge house to go meet in. These are just like-minded people who all hate God. They hate Jesus Christ. They hate authority. They have enormous appetites and ambition, and they're fundamentally dishonest, horrible people. And they tend to all be walking the same path at the same time. And that brings us to reason number 1,218 to get or keep your children out of the government schools from the Federalist Nicole Hannah Jones, an author, won a Pulitzer Prize last Monday for an essay that was featured in the New York Times. The article was called The 1619 Project. I believe I reported on this at the time. If I missed it, I apologize. I'm getting to it now. Her essay advanced historical inaccuracies. That determination was made not by Rush Limbaugh and Donald Trump and at their secret meeting in Sean Hannity's basement. No, that determination of historical inaccuracies was made by the New York Times, the newspaper that published her article. The New York Times added a 36-word editor's note stating a passage has been adjusted to make clear that the slavery... And just went on mealy-mouthed all around it. The note, that 36-word note from the editors at the New York Times, links to a 500-word update to the article from the magazine's editor-in-chief, who concedes, quote, "We recognize that our original language could be read to suggest that protecting slavery was a primary motivation for all of the colonists. The passage has been changed to make clear that this was a primary motivation for some of the colonists." So we're going to smear the colonists. That's what the whole point of the article is to do, is to smear the colonists and the whole idea of the founding of America. So we're still going to do that. And we're going to still be relatively dishonest because we don't actually have any colonists that we can show direct historical evidence for in the article. We're kind of just making this up because this is all historical revisionism. But anyway, it was an admission, according to the Federalist, of a substantial error, and there was a correction. Yeah. By the way, the correction was added 7 months after the article's publication. During that 7 months, schools were encouraged to use material from the project as curriculum in the government schools. That's why this is reason number 1,218 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. They'll be brainwashed with historical revisionism from leftist maniacs who later award themselves the Pulitzer Prize. So the article was false. It was misleading, it was dishonest, it was poorly researched. There's a dozen things that were wrong with this article, in addition to the fact that it was a frothing-at-the-mouth attack on the foundation of our nation, is what it was. A leftist, hysterical attack against America, the idea of America, which still exists, by the way, but only an idea at this point. Anyway, she got the Pulitzer Prize last Monday after all of this. So the Pulitzer Prize at this point is worth far less than toilet paper. Although toilet paper is worth quite a bit right now, but toilet paper during normal times. And the Pulitzer Prize could be used in place of toilet paper, and it would not be for blowing your nose. All right. Well, that takes us now from a conspiracy to award a Pulitzer Prize to a political hack job. That was a conspiracy there within the Pulitzer Committee. And we go from there to the gay new world. That's right, the gay new world. The march of the homosexualists has barely been slowed just momentarily by this, by the COVID-19 panic and hysterical freakout. The homos keep marching. The homosexualists and the abortionists and all of those who are hell-bent on destroying your children and mine and destroying this nation, they keep marching. In fact, this week coming up, the game show The Price is Right. Do you guys remember The Price is Right? Anyone who grew up in America remembers that, especially when you caught a cold and you were lucky enough to be home from school in the early afternoon, right? Right? And you heard Bob Barker, come on down, right? We loved it. The Price is Right. The Price is Right was part of the fabric of America. You might win a brand new car. Anyway, the game show The Price is Right this week will air an episode featuring a drag queen performing to raise money for Planned Parenthood. So I'm not making that up. I didn't have to take two separate stories and cobble them together to make that happen. That's actually what a drag queen on The Price is Right will be performing. Whatever drag queens do to perform, I'm not sure. I've never attended a drag queen story hour. But whatever they do to perform, which I have some idea, but I'd rather not get into it. They're going to perform to raise money for Planned Parenthood. The show will air on May 11th. With host Drew Carey, who I never liked that guy. I never found him funny as a comedian. I never found his pedestrian sitcom to be of any interest at all. And so Drew Carey. All right, Drew Carey, you go on my dark list, okay? By the way, folks, just so you know, just to remind you, earlier this year, the NFL Super Bowl aired an ad from Sabra that featured two drag queens. Uh-huh. What is Sabra? I don't know what Sabra is. I don't know what that is, but I'm not buying any, that's all. I don't want to go into what they say. They say, listen to this. I figured it out. One of the executives from Sabra who arranged for the drag queen commercial says, we're demonstrating just how incredibly versatile, relevant, and relatable hummus is.
Hummus?
Yeah, drag queens, right? Huh. Drag queens, hawking hummus? Really? On the Super Bowl? Okay. Talk about a world that I can no longer relate to. Meanwhile, from the war file, we go to Venezuela where an Associated Press investigation, according to Newsmax, an AP investigation published prior to a failed raid, an attempted coup by an American former Green Beret against the Maduro down in Venezuela. An AP investigation published prior to the failed raid places ex-Green Beret Jordan Goudreau at the center of a plot hatched with a rebellious former Venezuelan army general, Clivar Alcala, to secretly train military Venezuelan deserters in secret camps in Colombia and carry out an operation against Maduro. Anyway, my first question was, okay, so the coup failed. Everybody's been arrested. This guy and everyone else is being held by the Maduro regime down there as criminals and will probably be executed. But my question when I first started reading this article is, how was there an AP investigation published prior to the raid? It seems to me that the AP, well, they talk about maybe this guy's network was infiltrated by Maduro's people. And I mean, I don't know all the details, but this has the flavor of truth to it, the ring of truth, that this guy was trying to do this because the U.S. has offered a $15 million reward for Maduro's head on a platter or information leading to his capture, trial, and conviction. So I can see how, $15 million, okay. Invest a couple hundred grand, get to go on a really fun adventure and maybe kill Maduro. That would be awesome. I'd be up for that if I was 30 years younger. But why is the AP investigation published prior to the raid that Maduro executed against this guy. I'm not so sure if he was infiltrated by Maduro's people. He might have just been infiltrated by the accidental conspiracy of modern urinalism. That's why everybody wants a piece of the action. Everybody needs a main attraction. I got what everybody needs. Satisfaction guarantees. Everybody wants a piece of the I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for hanging with us into the second half of the show. You know what that song reminded me? That I have injured my air guitar fret hand. And I may never get it back. I've had this injury in my middle finger on my air guitar fret hand. And in the past, I have rarely missed a note on the air guitar. I can almost perfectly replicate. But I don't know. I may not. I may never get that back. I tried to play guitar, but I realized early on I was not good enough. It just wasn't going to happen for me. So I got over that dream quickly. But the air guitar, I never gave up on. But things just are not going to be the same because now it hurts to bend my finger, and I can't bend it all the way. And then I'm worried that it could be arthritis. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, everything. The body just starts to collapse somewhere around the age of 40. And it's just downhill. I mean downhill. All right. We go from the ex-Green Beret reaching for that brass ring, the $15 million reward, but outed by someone, possibly at the Associated Press, possibly from Maduro's office, possibly someone from Maduro's office at the Associated Press. I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility, okay? I'm sorry. Now, let's go to the death penalty file, where Volkert van der Graaf, who confessed to the May 2002 murder of a prominent politician in Dutch? It's Holland, right? Yeah. Holland, or the Netherlands. You can go with either one, I know. Okay. So this was a prominent Dutch politician who was an anti-immigrant. I shouldn't say that. He was anti-rampant Muslim immigration, so they call him a far-right politician, although he was a leftist, if it was even a boy. The name is Pim Fortuyn. Pim, P-I-M. I don't know if that's a boy or a girl. Maybe it's made clear in the... Anyway, it doesn't really matter, right? It's Holland. You can't even tell anymore. Holland has pretty much transitioned everybody to some sexually ambiguous state of just, I don't know, it's weirdness. But anyway, so he confessed to the murder, and he was convicted and he was sentenced. Where is it here? He was convicted and sentenced to probably in the 2003 to 2005 area, because it takes forever, even with a confession, to convict anyone anywhere in the Western world anymore. Well, he's been on probation since May of 2014. He's been on parole, I'm sorry. But he's had to comply with various conditions. You know, he has to report in, and he can't speak to the media. But he did successfully challenge a number of conditions in legal proceedings. So he's been on parole, fighting the conditions of his parole. He's been doing that for quite a while. And now here we are, 18 years after the murder, Volkert van der Graaf is a free man. walked out of prison this past week, a free man, after murdering a prominent politician. And we have an explanation from a Dutch official, because I don't know, nobody really has to explain themselves anymore. But for some reason, this guy volunteered an explanation. Maybe because somebody asked a question. This is from the Washington Standard, and it's possible that there's real reporters still somewhere in the world that are scratching their heads going, wait a second, how are you releasing someone who murdered a prominent politician? How are you releasing them? How are they a free man ever? Well, a Dutch official explained that Mr. Van de Graaff has fully undergone the sentence. There are no more conditions for him. Which, that's not really an explanation, but it is a statement of the facts the way they exist. Except it's a misstatement, because there is one more condition for Volkert Van de Graaff. That's for certain. There is one more condition, and that's Judgment Day. On the other side of this half of eternity, he's going to have to face his creator and the judge of all the earth, and he'll get what he deserves. From there, Europe knows what to do with a murderer. They don't know how to punish a murderer. They don't even know how to restrict a murderer. Anyway, it's just pathetic. But from there, we go to reason number 1217, in no particular order, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. From the Free Beacon, a new poll reveals that more than 3 in 4 college students, that's more than 75% for those of you who matriculated in the government schools, more than 3 in 4 college students want safe spaces on their campuses that are free of threatening actions and ideas or conversations. Uh-huh. And now listen to this. This is the ironic part that proves that there's not only the danger of your children being brainwashed against free speech in the government schools, there's also the significant reality that they will be particularly dumb at the end of it all, too. Because over 75% said they want safe spaces free of threatening actions or ideas or conversations. And in the same poll, 97% said that free speech is essential. 97%. Of which that 75% just said they wanted safe spaces, 97% believe that free speech is an essential pillar of American democracy. At the same time, a significant majority also support policies to restrict specific types of speech on campus. So the kids are either dumb or they're schizophrenic. It could be both, because they're on the SSRI. I forget what that stands for. Serum serotonin reuptake inhibitors, whatever. They're on antipsychotic or antidepressant medications. So there's a chance that they're both dumb and schizophrenic at the same time. So this should be reason number 1217 and reason 1219 to get your kids out of government school. Let's see. The survey polled college students aged 18 to 24 years old. Uh-huh. Oh, and the reason I say that, I know this is a story from college, but all these kids went to government schools. They all went to the public schools. So just had a conversation with a young man about should he homeschool. And you know, I told him straight up, I said, if you have to forego the house you want or the car you want, you know, even if you have to live in some relative form of poverty compared to what you had before you got married and had children. Just, you have a whole different obligation now. It's worth giving up the car. It's worth giving up the house on the hill or whatever it is you think you want. It's worth putting that on hold for the next 20 years. Yes, absolutely. And then I gave him some advice on how to do it, and that was all well and good. Now, we go into the widespread hypocrisy file. I have way too much news. There's no way I'm going to do all this. I'm going to try and go faster. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, let me review my notes. Yes, this is the first direct COVID-19 story of the show. And it's from the widespread hypocrisy file where the Telegraph in London reports that the scientist whose advice prompted Boris Johnson to lock down Britain has resigned from his government position. He resigned last Tuesday night, admitting that he broke social distancing rules so that he could commit adultery. And yeah, that's right. He invited his married adulterous, what do you call it? well, just adulterous over to his house. So he allowed his adulterous affair participant, conspirator, maybe we would call her, to come and visit him where they could commit adultery. And everyone's irate with the fact that the guy broke quarantine, but nobody wants to point out that he was also committing adultery with another man's wife. We don't get upset about that anymore. I do. It bothers me. And my extremely attractive audio engineer pointed out immediately that that is a death penalty offense. And in fact, it is. It is a death penalty offense to seduce another man's wife. And if we had the death penalty for that, not only would no one ever get executed for it, except maybe once every millennia, it also wouldn't happen very often at all. Neil Ferguson, in addition to being poor at math, or perhaps fundamentally dishonest, and it's somewhere in his deep black heart, willing to mislead the world in order to start all this panic. I don't know what his motivations are. I don't know. But, I mean, we know now what this is an indication of what type of character he has. Cheating with another man's wife, that's like one of the worst things you can do. And so if he's capable of one of the worst things you can do ever, well, I don't know what his motivations were in his misleading, incorrect, spastically hysterical projections that I will admit I just never bought them from the beginning. I just never bought them because, forgive me for being skeptical of people who lie all the time and have lied to me my entire adult life. I have a healthy skepticism of them. Okay, let's go. Now, I don't have time. I don't have time to get into all that. I got to get to this news. And this is where I might flip out and lose it right here. An article from Breitbart, the headline reads, "Governments fear second wave after outbreaks in Germany and people mingling in Italy." Can you imagine that? The government is scared because people are mingling. Tell me that we're not living in some kind of alternate universe where I'm going to wake up any moment and realize this was a dream. A really long, really bad dream. Mingling. Got them wetting their pants again. Anyway, folks, I'm telling you, this second wave thing is coming at us, and they're going to drive this and drive this and drive this, because this lockdown, I know I was wrong that it couldn't last more than 2 weeks, but that was before I realized that no one has any balls anymore. I forgot that. Okay? And I apologize for being vulgar, but I'm just going to say it the way it is. I forgot. And so now this has gone on for coming up on 2 months. And I'm telling you, it's not going to go on much longer. And I also want to tell you that we will not recover from this like we did before. There's not going to be the rush and the roaring comeback that Donald Trump keeps talking about. It's not possible, and I'll get to why. But this second wave, countries, listen to even Breitbart, which is allegedly to the right of left, so they say countries are wrestling with how to ease curbs on businesses and public activity without causing the virus to come surging back. Folks, we all got to get this. The virus has to come surging back. You idiots, you stupid children. I've been saying this from the beginning, that we're not going to find a treatment. We're not going to find a magic potion. We've got to develop tribal immunity, and we've got to do it sooner rather than later. We have to protect the vulnerable. We have to isolate those who are identified as sick while they're sick. But we have to allow this thing to progress through society. And in fact, I'm not even so sure I would support quarantines at this point for the sick. Now that we know that the virus is orders of magnitude, possibly as high as 80 times less deadly than we were led to believe by this adulterous bastard. Anyway, the second wave is going to be the way they lock us down in the fall, if they ever let us out for the summer, which I think we're going to break out by the summer. And I hate to see that happen. I really hate to see that happen. I hate to see any politicians get shot over this. But I can tell you, as an observer of human nature for the past 30 years, that this is the type of thing that gets politicians shot. The wholesale hijacking of our entire nation is going to make some dude really, really mad. Mad enough to shoot you. So you better check yourselves, because I do not want to see that happen. Cuomo comes on. He talks about, we've got a possible complication. Children have been infected. We've got swollen blood vessels and heart problems. So there's some syndrome going around New York, 70 children in a state of 10 million people. Seven children have this symptom similar to Kawasaki disease, a rare inflammatory condition. And Cuomo includes it in his daily update. And then Breitbart reports there is no proof the mysterious syndrome is caused or related to the coronavirus. But that doesn't matter, because they want to keep stoking the fear, keep that level of panic and fear up there. And so I'm standing in a gas station the other day, and I had to stand 6 feet behind the other person. And when I got to the counter, I said, there's a line of people. I said, do any of us have any idea where they got this idea for 6 feet of social distancing? Can anybody figure that out? Nobody had any clue. Yet we stand on our mark as if we're on camera. And I investigated as much as I could. The best I can figure out, there was a three-foot rule related to some disease, I can't remember which, back 100 years ago. The government recommended, or some doctor recommended, you should stand 3 feet against anyone who's got TB and they're coughing, something like that. And as best I can figure, some bureaucrat in the CDC just said, well, let's double that. That seems too close. Let's double that, and then that'll be the guidance. Anybody who doesn't comply, well, eventually we'll have them arrested. I would have never thought anybody could have been arrested. I remember when the lockdown first happened, I remember driving around and thinking, how are the police going to enforce this? They can't pull everyone over. I was driving around. There was 40, 50 cars just within my own view. I pulled up to a red light, and a county sheriff pulled up right next to me. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and we made eye contact, and the light changed, and we drove to our destinations. So I never could have imagined it would have come to this, that they would be throwing salon owners in jail, that they would be harassing business owners and sending a tank to a bar. I just never thought it could have come to this, but here we are. And so the second wave has got me extremely upset. Oh, by the way, I found out from this story, but I'm not going to flip out. I'm not going to start screaming incoherently at you people like I have done in the past. And so I'm confessing that I am now prone to hysterical ranting and incoherent screaming, because I'm not able to cope with this anymore. And I'm telling you, a lot of other people are on edge. People are going to snap. My extremely attractive audio engineer was telling me just before we went on about a guy who tried to open an ice cream shop, but the line with the social distancing and the 6 feet, now you got a line a mile and a half long. People are having to wait a half hour for their ice cream. And they start snapping and yelling and getting mad at the employees, getting mad at each other. Folks, we can't do this much longer. We got to take this back. But anyway, I found out there's another country that did not lock down, and that's Belarus. Belarus, former member of the Soviet Union, did not mark lockdown. And as a matter of fact, they have seen a sharp rise in infections, right? Which is meaningless, right? A sharp rise in infections, because we now know that somewhere between 80 and 90% of the people who get this thing will never even know it. So a sharp rise in infections is really meaningless, but let's put that in the story because it's bad. Anyway, Belarus did not lock down. In fact, they just marked a victory day, the anniversary of Nazi Germany's defeat in Europe, which every other country ignored. The 75th anniversary of VE Day passed with Donald Trump laid some virtual flowers on a virtual something. Just pathetic and sad. The men who defeated the Nazis in Europe would not be able to comprehend what is happening right now. They could not relate. But anyway, Belarus did not lock down, and they marked VE Day with massive crowds, tens of thousands mingling. What a terrifying thing. And President Alexander Lukashenko has dismissed concerns about the virus as, quote, a psychosis. Thank you, Mr. Lukashenko, who I don't know anything about him. For all I know, he's a communist dictator. But I happen to agree that at this point, ladies and gentlemen, This is a genuine psychosis. Gentlemen, and I believe my extremely attractive audio engineer played that song just to mock me over my air guitar fret hand, because that's one of my all-time favorite air guitar fret. Anyway, I was watching last night. I actually was watching Stevie Ray Vaughan playing with Albert King, the legendary blues guitar player, left-handed, right? And so they're playing along together, and they're kind of letting each other lead. And the level of prodigy exhibited by Stevie Ray Vaughan in that set is astonishing, because he's playing with a guy, Albert King, who's been playing guitar for, at that point, 75 years, I don't know. And Stevie Ray was just, it was just astonishing. Anyway, if you get a chance to watch it on YouTube, I highly recommend it. Stevie Ray and Albert King, they did a whole bunch of stuff together, and it was just phenomenal. Now, I'm going to go a little long, folks, that's all, just because I got all this, and I got to get it out, okay? I want to go to the widespread relief file, where NPR reports that as hospitals were overrun in other parts of the world, the Army Corps of Engineers mobilized in the United States, hiring private contractors to build emergency field hospitals around the country. The endeavor cost more than $660 million. And now, nearly 4 months into the pandemic, most of these facilities haven't treated a single patient, which is great news. This should be a relief to everyone. And the $660 million, I think that was a smart investment, because we weren't sure if our hospitals were going to be able to withstand what was about to occur. The $660 million, by the way, is chump change. This falls out of our ashtray in America every morning on the way to work. And it's a pittance compared to the enormous amount of our grandchildren's wealth that we have squandered in this panic-stricken lockdown. Anyway, not only was this a smart investment, it was great training for the next epidemic. So now we know what we can do. Right? The Army Corps started building more than 30 field hospitals in mid-March. That's pretty amazing that we were able to do that. New York City, the Javits Center never reached full capacity. So why can't we open the country? Why? The nation's governors said earlier, NPR says, the nation's governors who requested the Army Corps projects said early models predicted a catastrophic shortage of hospital beds, and no one knew for sure when or if this is what infuriates me. Okay, see, I'm going to lose it and flip out. No one was sure if stay-at-home orders would reduce the spread of the coronavirus. Do you people think we're idiots? The projections of a couple hundred thousand or more were if we lock down. I remember that. You dishonest, lying, conniving urinalists. But they're already massaging this idea that the lockdown worked. And if it wasn't for the lockdown, but I'm sorry, the early projections accounted for this lockdown. And this merely proves that the lockdown was a mistake, and quite possibly the biggest mistake ever made in all of human history. And you know what? I'm going to say this, even though I know this is going to offend people I love. If you supported the idea of locking down, history is going to judge this event as the greatest failure of courage in all of human history. The most catastrophic failure of courage ever. And those of you who participated in it should be embarrassed. And those of you who instituted it should be held at this point criminally liable. Have I already said that on the show today? So my extremely attractive audio engineer and I have been debating because I'll do this article. I'll do this article from, here it is. It's Dennis Prager, who I'm not really a big fan of Dennis Prager, but he is a fairly good writer and he can be fairly observant. He says, The idea that the worldwide lockdown may have been an enormous mistake strikes many as so preposterous as to be immoral. That's right. It seems to stand up and say this was a mistake, or can we talk about the fact that this might have been wrong? You're deemed a heretic by the left and the right, which is bizarre, because this is so obviously the biggest mistake in human history that anyone failing to see it at this point, and I'm talking about what we're doing today and tomorrow, okay? I don't want to talk about the past for a second. If you don't realize at this point that this was a mistake, you're delusional. Or you're just not willing to admit you were wrong. Or maybe you're not willing to admit that you got scared and did something stupid. Anyway, Prager goes on, that's the way it is today on planet Earth, where deceit, cowardice, and immaturity now dominate almost all societies because the elites are deceitful, cowardly, and immature. I couldn't agree more. He says, here's the case for why the worldwide lockdown is not only a mistake, but also possibly the worst mistake the world has ever made. And Prager says, this is the caveat, for those intellectually challenged by the English language or logic, mistake and evil are not synonyms. The lockdown is a mistake. The Holocaust was evil. Massive mistakes are made by arrogant fools. Massive evils are committed by evil people. And I agree with Mr. Prager that in almost every case, this lockdown was not made with evil intent. I think it was made out of panic, fear, primarily of litigation, but fear. And for many of the people, the citizenry on the ground, the masses, there was genuine fear of actually getting sick and actually dying, which doesn't justify the fact that they agreed to this lockdown, but there was genuine fear. There was not evil, malevolent intent. Let me just say that. Okay, do I want to do any more from Prager? Probably not, because you've heard, I've said everything he wrote in this article. I said it a month or two ago. He says this is a mistake. Is this criminal? Or is this at least civilly negligent, something that these people could be sued over? The fact that most of the small businesses in America will never recover from this at this point. They will never recover. Their business will be destroyed. People are going to have to go to work for Walmart. Everybody's going to work for Walmart. So is this at the very least, civilly punishable as negligence? Especially having drug it out now for 2 months. Even if we decided to forgive the initial panicked lockdown, which I'm not ready to do that, by the way. Not ready to do that at all. But is this possibly now a criminal act? Is this just you're dragging on this lockdown now to ensure the utter devastation of the economy for a generation, which is what they're doing? Is this now a criminal act? And I think it very well may have crossed the line into criminal negligence. All right. But I'm very impressed that we were able to build all those field hospitals so quickly. And this certainly should help us be more prepared for if something like this were to happen again. But I'm telling you that there is a collapse coming. And it's going to be more significant than the Great Depression. And you should prepare yourselves for it, because this is going to be bad. I go to the KOCO.com. I believe it's a radio station. The Department of Agriculture is going to purchase about $500 million in surplus food, which they claim they're going to donate to communities nationwide. Yes, yes. KOCO reports that food waste has been a massive problem stemming from the COVID-19 pandemic. All right, all of you people out there who use this term, stemming from the COVID-19 pandemic, I'm not going to let you get by with it anymore. It's not the COVID-19 pandemic that caused all this. It was the panicked lockdown, the sheer lack of courage in the face of a potential crisis that has caused this. That's what it was. The COVID-19 pandemic has proven to be, while deadly, relatively mild compared to what we thought it might have been when it first broke out in China in January. In fact, we knew that by February, that it wasn't even close to what we were hearing on the news. Anyway, those of us who have a healthy skepticism of people who lie all the time and actually want to find good news and look for it. But I'm not going to let you get by with that anymore. All the animals that are being killed and euthanized and the crops that are being plowed under, it's not because of COVID-19. So don't try to pawn that off. Anyway, but the get back to the story. The USDA, the Department of Agriculture, says they have a program that aims to solve both problems, both people being hungry in food banks and farmers having food they can't sell. So do you get this? These people, these bureaucrats who never ran a business, who never produced a crop, who never brought a pound of beef to market, they actually think they can replace the free market, right? That's what they're actually trying to convince us that they're going to make it okay. They're not going to make it okay, folks. The government, $500 million, like I said earlier, that falls out of the ashtray of America on the way to work every morning. That's a pittance. They're not going to be able to fix this. The food supply chain is broken severely, and you can't fix that overnight. The amount of devastation that lurks in our economy over the next 3 to 12 months is devastating. It's devastating. And I wish we had some economists and mathematicians who started doing the work of trying to figure out how bad is this going to be. Because forget the projections about COVID being dramatically overinflated. I hope that we can even begin to try to quantify what has been done to our economy so that we can try to prepare for it, because it's going to be rough, folks. The article ends from KOCO, America's Farmers and... Oh, no, this is a quote from an FDA, a USDA, a Department of Agriculture bureaucrat hack who's never held a job in private industry and has never brought a product to market. He says, America's farmers and ranchers have experienced dislocated supply chain caused by the coronavirus, which is an outright lie. It was the panic and fear of the coronavirus that caused this. And it's about time we start addressing this like adults. And you know what? All right, I'm not going to say it. I'm going to leave that. Because you might detect that there's some anger in my voice. There's some anger in my voice. And I'm going to tell you, I've had a few debates on Facebook with people who want to open slow and they want to be careful. And they're so concerned for life, even though they're pro-aborts. They have such a concern for life now. In fact, somehow now the pro-abort left has assumed the mantle of those who are the ones who care the most about life, which is a bizarre irony that I can't even relate to. But I'm telling you, there are some people in our society for whom this lockdown has been a fairly pleasant experience. And I think it's primarily leftists and liberals in the tech sector, but not just leftists and liberals either. Just people for whom this has not been a financial disruption. In fact, for a lot of people, this has meant I get to skip the commute. I get to stay at home. I only have to work when the boss is able to watch me on my screen, and otherwise I can kind of fiddle around and whatever. So for a lot of people, this has been a fairly pleasant experience. And they want it to continue because, I mean, well, for their own selfish appetites. That's why. But what they're not thinking about is there are others of us out there who don't have a secure job with a big company. We built our own company that we work for and that our employees work for. And our industries are being destroyed. And so we don't want this to go on much longer. In fact, we're willing to risk getting sick and dying. So if you want to stay home, stay home. We want to go back to work and take the same risks we take every day. By the way, right now, every member of the McBurney Compound Clan has a 0.002 chance of dying of this virus. And that would really only apply if we were really old and had at least one underlying comorbidity. So if you actually run the math, it's astronomical, the chance we have of getting sick and dying from the coronavirus. Every time we leave the house, every time we depart the McBurney compound, we have a 0.02 chance of dying in a car accident. But we still drive. So let us take the risks. All right. So are we done? Are we gonna? I got a few more that I really want to do, and I apologize for going so long. But I want to do this from the LA Times. Again, this is not published by Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh via Donald Trump Publications. Okay, this is Michael Levitt is a Nobel laureate, Stanford biophysicist. This article appeared in the Los Angeles Times. He began analyzing COVID-19 cases worldwide in January. He correctly calculated that China would get through the worst of the coronavirus long before the other experts who were terrifying everyone said. And so this was the article. I just knew that in January we were starting to get good data out of China because we had doctors and university people talking to actual doctors. We no longer had to rely exclusively on the CCP. And it was obvious in January, by late January, that this was being hyped beyond all recognition. It was obvious to people who wanted to look. Now he foresees, Michael Levitt, the Nobel laureate, Stanford biophysicist, now he foresees a similar outcome in the United States and the rest of the world. Many epidemiologists are warning of months or even years of massive social disruption and millions of deaths. Levitt says the data simply don't support that dire scenario. In fact, he says, quote, what we need to do is control the panic. We're going to be fine, unquote. So it's politically incorrect to even suggest that that's a possibility. And that's no way to do science. It's no way to do medicine. That's no way to do public health, folks. We have to be willing to step out and say, you know what? We're going to be okay. And start reporting on the good news. Levitt noticed in China on January 31st, the country had 46 new deaths compared to 42 the day before. The rate of increase had begun to ease off. It was an early sign that the trajectory of the outbreak had shifted. 3 weeks later, would have been mid-February, people. Levitt told the China Daily News that the virus had peaked. And that turned out to be exactly true. That was the case. Levitt received the Nobel Peace Prize. I'm sorry, the 2013 Nobel Prize in Chemistry, for whatever that's worth. Now, we go on to the widespread clarity file. This is a brand new file because there hasn't been much of that. But Julie Kelly wrote that after a two-month trial, researchers are collecting early outcomes of the Great American Social Distancing Experiment of 2020. The results ain't pretty, and the experts are starting to admit failure. She says, we've been assured by the credentialed class that keeping a distance of 6 feet between healthy people for weeks on end was the only tried-and-true way to prevent the deadly spread of the novel coronavirus. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former head of the Food and Drug Administration, admitted Sunday that the draconian measures aren't working. While mitigation didn't fail, he says, I think it's fair to say that it didn't work as well as we expected. Okay. I would not let you get off that easy. And if we go to the governor of Virginia, Governor Northam, Slappy Northam, the governor of Virginia, Well, he's still carrying on the big lie about social distancing and the lockdown being effective mitigation. He says, what we're seeing now is the result of how people interacted 2 or 3 weeks ago, you see. And that's how he scolded his state on March 30th. And he says, what we'll see in a few weeks from now will be determined by how people behave today and the following days. This is March 30th. That Slappy Northam basically berated the people of his state. Well, Slappy, it's over a month later, Slap. All right? So you said you were going to make us wait a few weeks. Anyway, it would be, well, it's all determined now, Slap. It's all determined. You were wrong. We were right. You're insane. You're a tyrant. And if you don't take your boot off the collective neck of America, you might get yourself shot. And I don't want to see that happen. But I'm telling you, Slappy, this is the kind of thing that gets tyrants shot. So you better cut it out, because nobody wants to see that happen. Julie continues 5 weeks later. The record is reporting a record number of COVID-19 cases. Considering the harsh stay-at-home orders, and how and why are people still getting infected? But he doesn't have to explain that. He doesn't have to explain the fact that all of his dire projections included this idea of lockdown, social distancing. But people got it anyways. That's because I think I said it last week. I don't know if I said it. You can't have a quarantine where the grocery store is open. Doesn't work. To quarantine means you lock people in a room and then you have to feed them and bring them water. That's a quarantine that's effective. What we did was not a quarantine. It was the panicked, hysterical lockdown and closure of every church and almost every small business in America in a fit of fear and panic, which is embarrassing. Anyway, she concludes, social distancing is untested pseudoscience. On its website, the CDC provides no links to any peer-reviewed social distancing studies that bolster its official guidance. Folks, I've been involved in an industry where I work with people who we've all gone and attended sterile procedures, sanitary procedures, bloodborne pathogen cross-contamination training. None of us ever heard of 6 feet for anything ever, not one time, never. It's made up out of whole cloth, sucked out of the tip of the thumb of some bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. So there's more and more evidence that more and more people have this, and it's good news, folks. The more people who have it and who aren't getting sick, that means this disease is not nearly as deadly as you feared, as I feared, as anyone feared when we first saw and heard the lies coming out of China when things were genuinely cloudy and unclear about what this was. As of today, 11 members of the U.S. Secret Service have tested positive. 23 others on the Secret Service have had the disease but have recovered. Mike Pence's spokeswoman, Katie Miller, tested positive at the end of last week. And that has caused Anthony Fauci and Dr. Birkenstocks with her scarf to put themselves into some sort of quarantine, some modified quarantine by which they'll probably figure out a way to get their mugs in front of a camera again. Anyway, do you think all these people weren't participating in this idiotic social distancing and 6 feet and put a filthy rag on your face and lock down and stay home? And they're all participating in it and they're all getting it anyway. You know why? Because this disease is very catchy. It's very, very catchy. So you can't have Home Depot open and the grocery store open, although I don't want to give them any ideas. I should shut up about that. Anyway, this cluster at the highest realms of power in the country suggests either social distancing is of little to no value, or, and definitely that lockdown is of little to no value, or the people who are telling us we have to do this aren't actually observing it themselves. One of those two things is true. Because I can assure you, actually quarantining yourself and locking yourself in your house and not leaving, that works. It's not very sustainable, but it does work. But these people are probably not even complying with the mitigation efforts that at best would provide a very modest amount of mitigation. Very modest. Certainly not worth the wholesale destruction of my grandchildren's inheritance. It's not worth that. But over at Planned Parenthood, Teleabortions are on the rise. That's right. Mifepristone is a drug used, one of the drugs used as in chemical. They call them medication abortions. I call them chemical weapon abortions. It's not approved. It's not approved as part of the current hysterical bunch of rules that bureaucrats churned out. It's not part of that. They haven't approved it. You can't go to the drugstore and get it. At least not yet. But websites such as Aid Access and Rablon sell and distribute mifepristone regularly online, so people can get it. And apparently when they do get it, they can call Planned Parenthood and do a teleabortion with an abortionist who will help them figure out how to properly use the unapproved drug that they just procured surreptitiously. But apparently Planned Parenthood is allowed to say that they're doing that, and it's okay with everybody because we're not allowed to criticize Planned Parenthood, never have been. It's highly politically incorrect to say anything bad about Planned Parenthood, and that's no way to do medicine, that's no way to do science, that's no way to do public health. Meanwhile, from the justice file, a Massachusetts man convicted of... Okay, now this guy's name I'm going to say, okay? His name is Glenn Christie. He's 54 years old. One of his former roommates in jail or prison, wherever he is, he's in the Massachusetts Treatment Center, whatever that means. One of his former roommates died with the virus. Everybody reports died of the virus. I'm not even willing to concede not a single death anymore. I'm not even willing to concede a single one until I see the comorbidities. I'm sorry. You people are lying. I think people are dying from this virus. I think it's very few, that's all. And very few young, healthy people, which is great news, which good news travels slow on this virus for whatever reason. Anyway, one of Christie's former roommates there at the Massachusetts Treatment Center, which is a jail of sorts, died with the virus. So the health risks to a person in custody, judge says, entitled Glenn Christie to a new hearing, and Chief Justice, that was Chief Justice Ralph Gantz, he wrote that. And then he said, a judge must give careful consideration not only to the risk posed by releasing the defendant, flight danger, other risks to the members of society, but they also have to give consideration to the likelihood of further criminal acts that might be carried out by the defendant being released. But also, during this pandemic, the risk of the defendant, that the defendant might die or become seriously ill if kept in custody. My, how is a judge supposed to balance all these major concerns? Well, we've been told, well, we're only going to release some low-level, non-violent offenders, of course. So anyway, Glenn Christie, 54 years old, was ordered released. His lawyer tweeted out, there are so many more lives to save, but I've saved 54-year-old Glenn Christie. Folks, 54-year-old Glenn Christie was in the Massachusetts Treatment Center because he had been convicted of repeatedly raping a 12-year-old boy. And I don't need to say anything. All right, Gavin Newsom says California will not get back to normal until we have a vaccine. That's from the Dim New World file. But he is allowing bookstores, flower shops, and clothing stores to open with curbside service so that we can all shop in the filthy parking lot. That's great. Certain modifications. He says dine-in restaurants, don't even think about it until phase two, and nobody even knows what phase two is. He did note that individual counties can choose to continue more restrictive measures than even his insane tyrannical policies. Breitbart reminds us researchers are working on a vaccine for COVID-19, but they also remind us no vaccine for any other form of any other coronavirus has ever been approved. Never. Not once. Ever. Never. Trump, meanwhile, he tells reporters, he told us last week, that America is likely to have a vaccine by the end of the year. That's because he's an idiot. Only an idiot could have been bamboozled into this. I know he made a lot of money in real estate. That doesn't mean he's a genius. All right, from the widespread fear-mongering file, a Yale scientist, we're not allowed to question a Yale scientist, he went to Yale after all. He's got one of those baseball hats with a funny-looking Y on it. Let's let him run the world. Yale epidemiologist Greg Gonzalez is criticizing the government's plan to reopen the country, and in a tweet he said, He suggested that it would be genocide by default to lift the shelter-in-place restrictions. And, of course, he noted that it would disproportionately impact people of color, because that's the obligatory. Gonzalez's tweet was highlighted this week in a report by China's state-run communist publication, The People's Daily, because it's like we're all China now. I don't know. It's just bizarre. Finally, from the new normal file, and this better be the new normal, folks, Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco gave a speech, and he said, I'm not enforcing stay-at-home orders. He said 8 weeks ago, officials, including Governor Gavin Newsom, participated in something never done before in our nation's history. He said the government ordered residents into their homes, closed their businesses, made them wear masks, forbid them from going to church, and eliminated the constitutional freedoms put in place over 200 years ago. He said our civil liberties were placed on hold as part of a greater effort to flatten the curve and prevent hospitals from being overwhelmed. It worked, he said. And then he went on to list a series of statistics showing that the catastrophic panic that made us all wet our pants just never occurred. He did urge at-risk residents to stay at home, but he said the original projections have been proven wrong. There cannot be a new normal. He said there cannot be a new normal, said the sheriff of Riverside County, California. He said any new normal is a direct attack on basic rights, which sets us apart and makes us the greatest country in the world. It's about time someone stood up and said that in public. And listen, he even is willing to tell them it worked. I'm not willing to tell them that, but if it'll get us our country back, I'm willing to talk about it, okay? But I think some people need to be held responsible because we cannot allow this to happen again. We cannot allow this to happen. That's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. Thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at realscienceradio.com, where you can go and get the list of how lockdowns kill people. That's at realscienceradio.com. And I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life, and of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.